point. Take the 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 point. All right, hello, oh, sorry.
Go ahead and start.
Nah, we might as well just start there. We've already screwed up once. Hello, listeners. This is take two of our National Championship Game 2017 podcast. We had some problems with Phoenix LTE coverage. My name is Tom Zalesnak, and I'm here with Dan Partridge and Ryan Spillett, live from Phoenix, Arizona. And we are here with our National Championship Game podcast. So we're going to break down the Alabama-Clemson game, the game that all of America wants to see. But we figured first we would start by recapping just a couple of interesting bowls or interesting changes that have happened over the last week since we last recorded. And for that, I'll turn it over to Dan Partridge to talk about the Rose Bowl and LSU.
Hello, America. Welcome to the last Take the Points podcast of the year. This is going to be a really good one. I have a feeling. So just to recap the end of the bowls, LSU looked great. Eddie O has got the energy. We'll see what Matt Canada can bring to the table going forward. The Rose Bowl was probably the game of the year. We'll talk about that a little bit more, but I mean, just hats off to both teams. I mean, I don't really think there was a winner or a loser in that game. Great game. Now let's talk about the playoff games. We'll start with Alabama. Washington, that was the first game played. Washington is going to send five guys on that defense to the NFL, and people kind of underestimated that fact, and also the fact that Alabama is a freshman quarterback, and Lane Kiffin is the coolest slash craziest coach in America, and, you know, there was a lot of weird stuff, and I was fortunate to get a cover there, I think we all were, with Alabama minus somewhere between 14 and 16.
Yeah, I put down a lot of money on that one, and I was sweating it out just a little bit. Fortunately, their defense is so good. I had a good feeling that they weren't going to give up a touchdown in garbage time, but it was a lot closer than I'd hoped for.
Yeah, it was an absolute sweat the whole game. So Alabama moving on, not super impressive, but it doesn't matter. Now we're talking about Clemson, Ohio State. It's supposed to be the game of the whole week, blah, blah, blah. Total awful performance by Ohio State. I don't think Urban Meyer's coached a game that bad since before he got to Florida, I'm guessing, maybe. Or maybe that
Bowling Green.
Yeah, but Bowling Green or something. So JT Barrett looked awful. Ohio State looked like they had no playmakers. Their defense didn't look fast. Clemson's defense looked amazing. Clemson's offense looked so-so. But it was great to be there in person and watch Ohio State get smacked in the mouth. Watch all fans. It was 31-0 in the fourth quarter, and the guy behind me was like, "We just got to get a couple first downs and get it moving." I'm sorry, that was when it was 24-0. He's like, "It's still a 3-score game." And I was sitting in the Clemson section, which was awesome, and I was so happy I got in that section. And he was like the one Ohio State fan. And at one point, he crossed the line. Said, all these orange motherfuckers around me. And he said that, and about three guys turned around and said, "Really, man, all of us are here." And that guy almost got run. I forgot to mention that. But that was a lot of fun. Moral of the story, screw Ohio State. This is what you get for being dicks. Enjoy your blowout. Go home. I'm sure it'll be in a fucking BCS game next year. Yeah, so that kind of brings us to the title game. But before that, you guys got thoughts on any of that stuff?
Yeah, Ryan, go ahead.
I mean, on the playoff games, not really. I mean, Dan kind of covered it pretty pretty simple stuff. Two pretty lopsided games. I mean, the Rose Bowl, that was just unbelievable. What an unbelievable game. So fun. It was like 5 hours, but it didn't feel like 5 hours. I mean, it was just really incredible. Penn State looked terrible early, then just not phased, and that was just what they did all year, just completely unfazed. And Barkley is an absolute stud.
He's so good.
He is so good in every aspect. I mean, he can block. He can catch out of the backfield. He can run you over. He can juke you. A little that he's got some of that Le'Veon Bell to him. He had a few of those real super patient kind of jump cut runs that were really, really impressive. I mean, he was better than any single player that Ohio State has.
Yeah, yep. I've heard the argument made that he's the best back in college football, in, not as a pro prospect, but just in college this year. I don't know if I'm 100% on board with that, but definitely I would say he's top three.
Top three most impactful. I mean, with all he does, he's phenomenal. But, I mean, wow, Sam Darnold, holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like I'm watching Andrew Luck. I mean, from everything from the size to the mobility, the arm strength, to the super boring interview after the game. It was hilarious. My brother's texting me. He's like, did that guy just win the Rose Bowl, or is he interviewing for an entry-level bank position? And I was like, I can't tell. He wasn't sweating. He wasn't like excited. He's just like super, super chill.
That's so been the scouting report on Darnold, is that he's very composed for an 18-year-old, and that's part of the reason that he has succeeded, whereas their previous quarterback didn't. Composer.
He was phenomenal. I'm really excited to watch those two teams next year. I think you're looking at probably 2 and 3 in the country next year, just in my eyes. So really excited. What did you think, Tom? What'd you take away from these games?
Well, there was a reason last week in our last podcast I really said that the Rose Bowl might go down as the best game. And the reason is because these are the teams that have been playing better than anyone besides Alabama for the last, well, basically since October. In any other year, these are two playoff caliber teams. I mean, if USC had Darnold playing all year, they're probably in the playoff. And Penn State, you know, if they had their linebackers all year and if they played the way they played since October in the game against Pitt, they probably win that game and they probably have a shot at the playoff as well. So I knew that was going to be a good one. It exceeded even my high expectations. And it was awesome. Even as a Penn State fan, seeing them lose, like, I couldn't be too upset because it was just such a great game. And USC is a really awesome team. I mean, those are your two best non-playoff teams for sure. And so I loved it. LSU, very impressive, I wanted to mention as well. They look great. They shut down Louisville completely. And with Matt Canada, the offensive coordinator for Pitt, who we talked about Pitt a lot this year and how they were an automatic lock for their overs. Now he's going to LSU. LSU has struggled with offense and especially at the quarterback position for, what, I want to say 8 or 9 years now. This is their best chance to turn that around, and they have to go into 2017 as a title contender. And maybe it'll take another year, but they're a team to really watch out for. After Les Miles was let go, you didn't know what to expect. Were they going to get Tom Herman? Were they going to keep Eddie O? Would they go in a different direction? I think they made the right move. Keeping Eddie O for his motivation, getting Matt Canada for the X's and O's. I look forward to really big things, and I think they can start to challenge Alabama immediately next year. Other than
totally
that,
agree.
Yeah, nothing to say about the playoff games. I mean, both were totally one-sided. I think we got the game that America wanted and that we all wanted all year long, so I'm happy about the championship matchup. All right, so with that in mind, by the way, listeners, we started over, so you missed my original introduction, but I'm very sick, so I can hear it in my own headphone. I don't know if it'll come through over the podcast, but if I sound like shit, it's because the Zelesnok family has been ill for a week. So I apologize to those audiophiles out there. If you're listening on the Neil Young Pono device and you hear my crystal clear nasal quality, you're not going to be happy, Dan.
Wow. Download this podcast for just $28.99 for just this episode. ridiculous.
There was a 92% chance we'd make a Neil Young reference, but there was only a plus 8,000 chance it would be the Pono. I don't even know if that's the actual name of that device. I think it is.
Pono, Tony Romo, who knows? Let's go.
All right, it doesn't matter. We're going to talk now about the national championship game. We're early in the podcast. We do have several other topics we'll get to afterwards, but we want to focus on the game because that's what this podcast is all about. So the Alabama Crimson Tide are a 6.5-point favorite against the Clemson Tigers. The over-under is 51. The game is Monday night, January 9th. 8 p.m. Eastern, in Tampa, Florida. We are recording this on Friday night, an exciting Friday night, Dan. So what is today, like the 6th? I don't even know.
No one knows.
So we're about 3 days out, so the lines might shift slightly or something big might happen. But the biggest news and the thing we should talk about first is the departure of Lane Kiffin, which is a huge deal in my opinion. Dan, you're the number one Lane Kiffin fan on earth, so please, how does this affect the game, and what do you think about this move by Saban?
This is unbelievable. This is so Lane and Saban. Like, this is a crazy story. If you're an Alabama fan, you got to be sick to your stomach. And if you're not, then you're one of those super cocky fans who thinks that you can't lose ever, which is very tricky.
Paul Feinbaum said today that you should not question Nick Saban's logic.
Paul Feinbaum isn't always accurate. He's got some suspect things he believes in. I don't want to go on a rant. I've heard – anyway.
I love Feinbaum, but he does perhaps favor the SEC teams, including Alabama, just a slight bit.
He favors you know what? Real quick, we're going to – he favors the SEC, white people, and the right. But we're going to move right on.
Okay. Anyway, I disagree with Paul Feinbaum on several issues, but especially on this. I think this is a huge deal, Dan, and the way Alabama had been rolling all year long, I thought you'd be a fool to bet against them, even though Clemson looked great. But without Lane Kiffin, I mean, Lane Kiffin is the number one reason that Alabama beat Clemson last year. If you look at that game last year and you say, what was the deciding factor? It was Lane Kiffin's play calling. He had a power running team with Derrick Henry, and he took a lot of chances and he threw a lot of deep balls, and they were able to catch Clemson off guard and win the game. It was that game when I really turned around on Lane Kiffin, when he went from this, you know, troubled head coach to, all right, he's a pretty good coordinator, but we don't know how he'll do in a big game. And then after that game, me and you were singing his praises like, all right, this guy's had his troubles in the past, but he is a great offensive coordinator. And he called like basically the game of his life. And now you've decided to get rid of that guy like 6 or 7 days before the biggest game.
Yep. It's really complicated. So Lane leaves allegedly on his own, gives an interview on Mike and Mike, and they're like, why did you leave? And he said, because I'm focused on bringing a national title to FAU, which is the best answer ever, period. And then he goes on some sort of spiel where he's like, nah, me and Nick are cool. In fact, I'm looking into sitting in the press box for the game, and we're trying to work something out. That interview happened at like 7 in the morning Eastern. Nick Saban had a press conference like 8 hours later. They're like, hey, Nick, is Lane going to be in the press conference? Nick answers the best ever. He's like, I don't think that's possible from a legal standpoint. And it's something we're not going to look into, which means fuck that guy and fuck him too. Let me just translate that for America. It's a hilarious situation. It can't be good. Sarkisian's picking his nose on national TV. I don't know if you guys saw that. He picked his nose when Cameron ate his book. That happened on TV last week. And now that guy's got to call plays. The guy who was drunk right down the street at ASU coaching a game. This isn't good. It's not good. They had Calvin Ridley coming out today saying the offense is faster than ever and it looks great. That's people trying to hype themselves up when they know something isn't true. It's a problem for Alabama, and they're going against a hot defense. So
now, what was the Lane Kiffin line? He said something about what was the happiest you've ever seen Nick Saban?
Yes, and Dan? He said, I've never seen Lane Kiffin happy. I only remember the ass chewings.
Yes, you've never seen Nick Saban happy.
Yeah. That's what I mean. But yeah, so are we ready to break down this game?
Yeah. So before we break it down, do you think that Sark can adequately fill in? Or do you think this is a huge loss?
Huge loss. Massive loss. Kiffin revamped that offense. That's why Saban brought him in a couple of years ago. He knows what plays to call. People are around him for only scored 24 points on Washington. He knew that in order to beat Clemson, he's going to have to run the football. He's playing a conservative game plan. It makes total sense. He was a scapegoat for a non-blowout. That's what happened. And the guy's been nothing but great for 2 years straight. So karma's going to come back. I don't know. Maybe this week, maybe not. But it's
to
a
me,
bad
it
movie.
Seemed like a purely egotistical move, which I understand why that happens. But to me, it reminds me of one of those like big time bands that breaks up. And it's like you had, you know, one more tour left. Like you couldn't have just tolerated each other for 3 more weeks. In this case, you couldn't have just figured it out for 7 more days.
Nope, they could not do it. They had to part. So, okay, here we go. This is what I'm looking at in this game. It's a rematch from last year, so Clemson has more motivation than Alabama. Alabama's got a lot of freshmen on the team. They got a lot of youth. The people who are young or who are freshmen, like Hurts, haven't won a national title, so they'll be hungry. Obviously, the other people from last year will still be plenty motivated, don't get me wrong, and Saban's a master motivator.
Yeah, Dan, sounds like you don't believe in the process.
Well, of course I do, but this is what it comes down to me. Last year, Alabama won the game, yes, because of Lane Kiffin, but also because of special teams. Dabo got out-coached on special teams. He won't be out-coached on special teams 2 years in a row. And this is how I'm looking at this game. Is what offense is going to have a better chance of scoring on the other's defense? Because Alabama's offense isn't right, and they got Sark calling plays, and they got a freshman quarterback in the national title game against a really elite defense who just shut out Ohio State. As much as Ohio State isn't the best team ever, a shutout in college, and especially against Urban Meyer, is insane. So I think Alabama's going to have a hard time scoring points. Clemson, of course, should have some sort of problem scoring points because Alabama's defense is historically good. But this might be the week where we find out they are excellent. Don't get me wrong, but this was a down year in the SEC, and they didn't really play a murderer's row of teams and coaches. A lot of the best SEC coaches aren't there anymore. You know, they're not, as much as we make fun of these guys, you know, they're not playing, you know, Mark Richt anymore and a lot of the other, you know, Spurrier, like those kind of guys, they're not around. Like, there was no weeks off, and now there are weeks off. When you got to go play Mississippi State, and you got to play Tennessee, who's half-assed. And, you know, I mean, that's how I'm looking at this. So, to wrap it all up, I think Alabama's offense has a harder time scoring on the other defense than Clemson. So, for me, I'm going to take Clemson outright, 16-13. That's my pick.
16-13, wow. Exciting. All right. I'll hold my thoughts for the time being, and we'll pass it along to Ryan Spillett.
Hey, all right. Wow. Some shocking stuff there.
I'm more shocked by the score that Dan gave us than by the Clemson win.
Well, don't worry, fans of points. I'm going to go ahead and explain why this is going to go over. So the Kiffin-Sark stuff, agree with Dan that it's a big loss. However, Sark's been there all year. I have a feeling that Saban was already kind of prepared for this, and he may have already told Sark ahead of time, like, hey, you know, have a game plan ready for you know, a couple games. So I bet you anything that Sark's been making his own game plans and showing them to Saban. You know,
sure. Well, my question for you or both of you, it's not will Sark be prepared. It's is a prepared Sark as good as a prepared Lane Kiffin? We saw what, you know, peak Lane Kiffin was a year ago.
Right.
Peak Sark. I mean, peak Sark is, I guess, beating Arizona State by 7 touchdowns while drunk, which is still pretty good. But I don't think we've seen peak Sarkisian yet, so we don't know if he's capable of that kind of performance, but continue.
Right. But and that's kind of what I was getting at is I don't think Saban would do this unless he already knew ahead of time, like that he could do it. And I think that what that means to me is that Sark's been making game plans all along, and you know, they go with Lane's because Lane's the guy, but I think Sark's been making his own game plans all year. And I think Saban's super comfortable with that. He's been, you know, obviously editing as they go. And I kind of have a feeling that maybe Saban was planning this eventuality for longer than 7 days. With that being said, you know, Clemson's offense still not quite all the way there. But I think they have more options. I'm not going to say more threats, because I think Alabama has more threats for big plays. But I just think that Clemson is super balanced between Mike Williams being back this year. He didn't play last year. Kane, who was suspended for the game last year, he's back this year. We still know Renfro had his breakout game last year. He's still around. And I think could end up being the O.J. Howard of this game, that he could end up going for like 65 score or two. So it'll be interesting. I think this is going to be a close game. I think it's going to be similar last year. Like Alabama 30-27.
Okay, so you're taking the over then. All right, so I've thought about this. I am the guy who says always bet on Alabama, rule one. The Lane Kiffin thing changed everything for me. No way I'm laying 6.5 points with Alabama without Lane Kiffin. I'm not convinced to take the 6.5, although if I were picking a side, that's where I'd lean, is taking the 6.5 with Clemson. I also like, which ties into our strategy from the last podcast, the first half under bet, 25.5 points. I like that to go under in the first half. I think these teams will come out a little bit nervous. You've got freshman quarterback for Alabama. You've got a new offensive coordinator, and then you've got two great defenses. So that would be my favorite bet of the game, is under 25.5 in the first bet. To be honest, I've thought about this all week about who will just win the game outright. And I would have told you Alabama for sure before. The loss of Lane Kiffin really rubs me the wrong way, just in terms of the game. And Clemson just played great. And I think you've got Deshaun Watson, who, in my opinion, I think he wants this more than anybody else. So this is a really hard one for me. This is like totally even. I think my heart tells me Clemson wins this game and ekes it out, but you got to bet with your head, and my head tells me that Alabama is the best team for 8 years in a row. And so against my heart's desire, I think I'm going to take Alabama by a field goal. I'm going to say 27-24. Alabama with another defensive touchdown, which turns out to be the game breaker. So that's my pick. Jonathan Allen, scoops and scores.
Love it. Love it.
Anything else anyone wants to add about this game specifically? Or shall we have... Yes, Dan.
Real quick, just some stuff about gambling on this game. One, the line opened around Clemson plus... prior to Clemson being Ohio State, it was Alabama minus 7.5. As soon as that game closed and went to 7, now it's at 6.5.
Those lines before the game, before the previous game, those don't really count. I mean, you have to count the line from when the matchup is determined. So it really started at 7 and it went to 6.5. Not much movement, even with the news about Lane.
Exactly. So that's one gambling part about that. The line, two, 90% of the money line bets are obviously on Clemson. So where does Vegas make money here? They make money on Alabama winning the game and only winning, not covering. So Vegas is looking for an Alabama win by 3, FYI. So you guys are right on pace for that. Also, if you're looking for a prop in that game, you might want to put Alabama by 3. Or like 1-4 or something like that.
I like that pick.
And also the unders are pretty good. And I forgot to mention earlier, we were fortunate enough to get Penn State plus 13.5 in that game, because we were out at the store and we came back and the game started. SC scored. We left at Penn State 13.5. So that was extra fun, by the way, for the Rose Bowl. Much easier.
Ooh. Well, Dan, tell everybody, just quickly remind everybody about our under bet strategy that we talked about last podcast. What was the strategy and then how has it paid off?
All right, here's the strategy for all bowl games. It's based on motivation. It's hard to get up for each half, for both teams to get up each half and get an over in each half. It's kind of hidden because there's a lot of scores all over the place, and you kind of go, oh, yeah, that sounds about right. But you realize that one half has a lot more points than the other. That's kind of what's been going on. Moral of the story is this is how it works, America. Every bowl game, you place one unit bet on the under in the first half, regardless of the game, regardless of the total. Just close your eyes, don't, whatever. And if you win, you stop there. And you have one unit for that bowl, and you go on, you go about your day. If you lose, you bet two units on the second half under. So you got to be, you know, aware of what's going on. You got like 15 minutes or whatever, a half hour to place that bet. So you must, you know, kind of be not at work or what, I don't know. But the moral of the story is it comes in at a ridiculous rate. Like it lost only once last year, and this year I think it lost four times. And on the games where it lost, there was a lot of bullshit. There was an overtime, there was a punt return, a lot of nonsense. So
the only game that really where it really failed miserably was that Rose Bowl, which
that was the only one.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That was just the highest scoring game of bowl season. So what are you going to do?
Yeah, and we had nothing to do with that. However, if you were sports betting that day and you bet the under in the first half, Iowa, Florida winner, first half under Western Michigan, Wisconsin winner, under first half Oklahoma, Auburn winner, those plus three units, you would have lost three units on the Rose Bowl, pushed. Yeah, and each playoff game for winners. I mean, it came in all over the place, and it was a lot of fun. So jump on that early and often next year. This is going on, you know, two bowl years in a row. That's like 80 games, and this is a big sample size at this point. I mean, we're not talking about a 15-game spread, you know, run. So that's how you do it, and look for that next year.
Yeah, I wasn't able to do it for every game. You know, I had things come up, and I missed some. But I went 10-2 in the games I was able to bet on, and including, you know, one 5-0 day, I think, might have been New Year's Day or New Year's Eve, the day of the playoffs. I don't remember. One day was 5-0, and then there was, you know, like a 4. There was like a 4-1 day. I don't remember. I'm making all this up, but 10-2 overall. Really good. Basically, you need to win by at least like a 3-1 margin. And so I did that nice and easily and increased my bank account. My sportsbook.antigua account increased quite rapidly. So I would recommend doing that for the national championship game as well. I like that first half under. If that for some reason doesn't come in, double up on the second half under, whatever it is. I'm sticking with it. It served me well. And next bowl season, we will try to remind you, you know, if Take the Points exists and if we're not crushed by a meteor, then before the bowl season, we'll remind everyone. And we're going to try this the entire bowl season, all, you know, 40 games next year. See how it goes.
And just real quick, there's two things about bowls next year. One, we'll do the unders. And the other, something me and Ryan have been talking about. You know, when talking about bowls, we always talk about motivation, and three games in particular from this bowl season really stood out. Houston, San Diego State, LSU, Louisville, and Baylor, Boise. Those three games were all pretty much, you know, blowouts by 20 points. And what did all three losing teams have in common in that? What does Boise, Louisville, and San Diego State have in common? Is that all three as non-traditional power schools were considered as potential playoff teams, playoff crashers, New Year's Six crashers, all that kind of shit. And as they lost games towards the end of the year, San Diego State lost three to end the year after being favored 18 straight games. Louisville blew out Florida State, won the Heisman, but also fell apart. Houston also beat Florida State. They beat Oklahoma, and everyone got excited. They fell apart. Look for non-traditional power teams who are talked up really big in the preseason in the first half of the year who fall apart to mail in their bowl game. Louisville, Boise, and San Diego State, I mean, come on. I mean, that was insane. And especially Boise. Boise was down 31-7 in the fourth quarter against a Baylor team who lost six games in a row. Hadn't won since October 14th in Texas. And they're playing 10 weeks later and on December like 27th at a baseball stadium in Arizona, and you're going to get blown out by that team? So really huge motivation thing to look at going forward. I think we really found something in that, and I really think we can hammer that next year. It's one of my favorite theorems we've come up with in a long time.
Well,
I love it.
Well, that is, I guess that is a new theorem per se, but it's also sort of a subset of what we said on our first bowl podcast, which is look for teams that were doing well up until the last few weeks and who ended up in a bowl game that was much lesser than where they expected to be in, say, late October. So I think you could say the same thing happened sort of in the Michigan-Florida State game. Like, if you were predicting that game in the last week of October, you would have said Michigan's on the road to a playoff berth. Florida State's not even going to make the New Year's Six. Somehow they end up playing each other. For Michigan, it's sort of a letdown not to be in the playoff. For Florida State, they're happy to even be in that game. And it ends up being a really tight game, and Florida State ekes it out. Whereas, you know, Michigan on paper is the much better team and should win that game. And the same thing with Boise. Boise, if you checked in October, you would think they'd be in a much better bowl than where they ended up. So just look at teams that are sort of disappointed to be where they are, especially teams that just, you know, bounce back 3 weeks from the end of the season and say, like, where did this team think they'd be a month ago? Where did they end up? And if it's significantly lower, then I think that's a recipe for them to not show up.
Agree.
All right, let's take a quick break. If you are one of the people who just tunes into this podcast just to hear about the games, we thank you for listening. We're going to come back with a bunch of other stuff, some football related, some not football related, and also our annual Take the Points Awards 2016. So that'll be the rest of the podcast, and we'll be back in just a second.
Ryan has to go get the notebook, but start it whenever.
The notebook? Is that slang for something?
Oh, no. Like, we wrote down, like, the award winners on the notebook.
Oh, so. Okay. All right, but folks. All right. We've already started, Dan. It's too late.
Unbelievable.
There's no chance at decorum in this episode. You guys, God knows what you're doing over there. I've got my Macallan 12-year over here. Things are getting crazy in the second half of this podcast.
Almost.
While Ryan's out, Dan, your thoughts on PJ Fleck going to Minnesota, breaking news from earlier today.
Complete awful move by Fleck. Minnesota is not a powerhouse. You can't recruit. There's nothing to really talk about. Horrible move by him. He could have waited a year and probably went to Notre Dame or somewhere great. So just a bad move by Fleck. I don't understand it. Just stupid all the way around.
Now, Minnesota was a bowl-winning team this year. They finished 9-4, and there's nothing stopping him from making another leap in 2 to 3 years.
Yes, but I don't know. It just seemed weird to me. It just seemed like he forced it.
I was very surprised as well. I figured, you know, given that nothing had happened so far, that he would be back at Western Michigan next year, but maybe he figured, you know, we're going to lose our best player. We probably won't succeed to this level again at Western Michigan, at least not for a long time. I understand wanting to get out this year, and maybe he just wanted to stay for the bowl game, so that could have limited his options. Minnesota's not a terrible pick. I mean, in the Big Ten West, your only real competition, well, I guess there's Iowa, Nebraska, and then, of course, Wisconsin. It is possible to win that half of the division. Now, beating the Big Ten East is a little bit tougher, but I don't know. If it becomes a temporary layover on his way to a bigger place, I understand. if Minnesota fans are getting fired up for his long-term tenure there, I wouldn't get my hopes up too much if you're a Gopher, you know?
No, it's a waste of time.
Do you think that the incident at Minnesota will have long-lasting effects and will affect him? Or do you think people will have forgotten about that by the time next season starts?
They will already have forgotten about it because someone else will mess up in the meantime. Same as every story in America, you know, school shooting or anything. Just move on to the next one. That's the
forget. I will say with, you know, we say things about like Chris Peterson. Why didn't he go to USC? Sometimes guys like a certain region or a certain state. I don't know much about PJ Fleck and his personal life. Like, does anyone know if he has any personal ties to the state of Minnesota?
No clue whatsoever.
Okay. So there could be that.
No. It's a waste of, it's so stupid. It doesn't matter if he's from there or not. It's a bad move by him.
All right. So we wish you luck, PJ Fleck, but curious decision. All right. Daniel, speaking of troubled programs, you have prepared a eulogy to a great program that may have just saw its end. You want to say a few words to honor the end of an era. And although, let me just preface this by saying, although this specific school may be going through some troubling things right now, there was a time when it was a simpler, more beloved program. And I think that's what you want to focus on. So tell the people what you're thinking.
Thank you, Mr. Tom. This is a very sad moment in college football. The end of an era has come upon us. It popped up out of nowhere, and it ended faster than anyone could have imagined. We're talking about that certain team from Texas, from Waco, Texas, coached by Art Briles, offense coordinator son Kendall Briles, amongst other coaches. That's right, folks. We're talking about my favorite team over the past 5 years, the Baylor Bears. Now, let me give you a little history on the squad. They almost had no football team whatsoever due to a murder involving a player killing another murder in the early 2000s. They went on some epic losing streak. They didn't win a conference game for years and years and years in the Big 12. They were like beyond the laughingstock. I think it would be easier for Vanderbilt to win the SEC than it would have been for Baylor to win the Big 12 in the early, you know, 2000s. And that's saying something.
It's comparable. I mean, they were sub-doormat level.
It's more. I really think
it would be like Indiana suddenly being the class of the Big Ten.
Exactly. So what they do is they hire Art Briles. Art Briles is a Texas high school legend in the coaching ranks. He moved on. He was the coach at Houston and blah, 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 blah. He brings his system to Baylor. And he brings Robert Griffin III with him. Robert Griffin graduated at 17. He goes to Baylor as a 17-year-old. He runs the 400-meter as a freshman and sets the NCAA Midwest Regional finals all-time record for the hurdle. Anyway, he signs RG3 or whatever. He comes to Baylor, and that's when the era begins. His first year, you know, they have some tough times. They actually upset a ranked Texas A&M squad, but they finished 4-7. Then RG3 tears his ACL early the next year, 2010. In 2009, correct. Thank you, Ryan. See, fellow Baylor expert, Ryan. Thank you.
Dan is doing all of this off his head, by the way. There are no notes for this, just for people wondering.
Yeah, this is true. This is off the top of my head right now. I got thrown off a little bit. Okay, so RG3, ACL, 2009, he gets a redshirt. He comes back in 2010. And in 2010, I really started paying attention to Baylor. You know, as you watch a lot of college football on Saturdays and the scoreline kind of flows around the bottom on ESPN, I would see, what the hell? Baylor, another freaking shootout, 48-37, you know, all these crazy scores. And, you know, I was sports betting pretty heavily at the time, more than I am now even. And, you know, was noticing all those overs were coming in. So then I got a little excited with them, figured that they were a more improved team than they were. But they did finish with a winning record and finished at 7-6. Then 2011, the real Baylor era begins. RG3 comes back for the 2011 season, and Baylor is on fire, and they burst onto the national spotlight. That's the year RG3 wins the Heisman. They beat Oklahoma for the first time in forever. Crazy game against TCU. They were up 47-24 in the fourth quarter, and somehow TCU storms all the way back for 48-47 lead. But RG3 catches a pass on the game-winning field goal drive, and they win 50-48. Like, come on, 50-48. That's an amazing game. They go to the Alamo Bowl that year against Washington, and they win 67-56. I think Baylor was favored by 10.5 points in that game. It was an unbelievable gambling moment. I'll save that for what's going on later. But that kind of brings you up to speed with Baylor through RG3. After that, they had Nick Florence. You think he was horrible. He had like 38 touchdowns and 10 picks. Then he leaves and Bryce Petty shows up. Don't worry. He had 46 touchdowns and 3 interceptions his first year at quarterback. 46-3. That happened. Like, Bryce Petty, he broke all RG3's records. And that just shows you that I'm not saying Bryce Petty is a better quarterback than RG3, but that system was so in tune. It was at its peak at that point because Art had players who he had for 4 years at that point. And he had freshmen. I mean, everyone on that team knew only Art's system within that four-year mark. And, man, they hit an unbelievable peak. So they were a lot of fun. They were always up for, you know, possible title talk, but they never really went that far. They played in the Fiesta Bowl and actually choked to Blake Bortles. That was pretty bad. But overall, they were a super fun team on a ton of overs, a ton of crazy moments, and we're going to talk quickly about the couple of our favorite Baylor gambling moments over the past couple of years. And again, this is all off the top of my head right now. I didn't get to notes on this, so I need you guys to help me out and throw some out there, but I will start it out, of course. Talk about the aforementioned Alamo Bowl, 67-56 cover. We're laying like 10.5 with Baylor, and it's in our bowl pool, our number one confidence, and which is crazy because now I look back on it like that's a big times team that was up for possible playoff talk, and it's their first time ranked real high and all that. They're laying double digits against a really talented Washington team. Anyway, they're down like 48-17 or 42-17 in the third quarter. And me and Ryan weren't even worried. They were down 25 points, and we're laying 10. We're like, they just got to get that fifth touchdown, and then we got to get one more, and then we'll be fine. And it was the calmest anyone could ever be at an amazing comeback, and it actually happened. And it got to a point at the end of the game, Baylor, I believe, was up 60-56, up 4 trying to run the clock out, and it was like 3rd-and-1 or 3rd-and-2. And we said, you know, we can only win if he scores on a touchdown on this play from the 40-yard line, because if he gets a first down, Baylor just takes knees. And we go, well, here we go. And they handed it off to whoever it was, Shock Linwood or whoever, one of those guys, Terrence Ganaway. That's who it was. And he shot up the middle for a 40-yard touchdown. And it was just like, yep, Baylor wins by 11, covers by half point. And if you miss the game, you look at it and go, oh, nice cover. But that was, we needed them to score 42 in a row, basically, and they did. That happened. I'll talk about a couple overs. They played West Virginia at West Virginia. Each team scored every time. I think it was 77-70.
70-63.
Or 70-63, or that was the Clemson score, but West Virginia I think it was 77-70 or 73-70, whatever. That happened. We had Baylor-Texas Tech this year with 70 points by half, with the a total of 82.5 on the board by the books or whatever. Like, good job. And that was a joke. Ton of great gambling moments. Can you guys think of any great Baylor stuff off the top of your head? Tom, go right ahead.
So I have two. One would be the Texas Tech game last year, which was at the time the highest over-under ever posted in a Power 5 game. I believe it was posted at 90 and easily went over. I think they got it in the third quarter.
Third quarter over.
Which we called our lock of the week, too. The highest over-under ever, and we called it the take the points lock of the week.
It was easy.
The other was the TCU game last year, I believe, when both teams, or maybe 2 years ago, when both teams barely missed the playoff and were both, they each had one loss. And that was just a phenomenal game that came down to the wire back and forth. And basically was who had the ball last. And I think it ended something like, 66-63 or something like that. So just incredible. It's a shame.
It was a great run and we had a lot of fun. And I would like to close the book on Baylor. We're not even going to really talk about them, you know, that much. It's that this is it. End of an era for Baylor. I'm signing off on Baylor. I'm done. Thanks for listening on that. You still have a lot more, but I'm done on Baylor. So there you go.
Well, Dan, Baylor was your team for a while, as was Oregon, these two high-scoring teams. Now, without them, you're left somewhat teamless. Do you have an announcement you would like to make to the people?
Yes. Yes, me and Ryan have been discussing, and feel free to get on board. We've chosen a new favorite team. This is going to be the team to follow. You know, growing up in upstate New York, you could have been a Syracuse football fan, and you still could be if they're good, but they're not, so you need to pick a new team. Penn State had some issues, but good for you, Tom, for sticking through Penn State, but I signed off on them long ago. I can't go back. Baylor was fun. Oregon was good. Alabama's a trendy team. You know, I can't take LSU. I can't really take Auburn. So here's the new pick. What team can win a national title, has a very, very proud background, is beginning a new era themselves, and also has a great music and food scene, which would allow vacations to possibly this city blank city limits festival every year? That's right, Tom. University of Texas, Longhorns. We're going horns in 2017. We're on Herman. We're going all the way. We're going to restore the program and try to win a national title. And we're going to get in the car, or you're going to get on a plane, and we're going to get there. We're going to go see Unknown Mortal Orchestra and Mac DeMarco and go to an art show and have barbecue and watch Texas beat the hell out of Oklahoma all in the same weekend. Or beat Oklahoma State, whatever. Like, it's going to be great. So for so many reasons, Texas is the no-brainer. Get your apparel. We will be Texas fans going forward. They are now added to our home teams. Tom, you can go through the home team's explanation, and then we'll add the fifth team after that.
Yeah, so we have our home teams that we follow every year. Up until this point, it had been UConn, Syracuse, Penn State, Baylor, and Oregon. These are teams that we're specifically interested, that we follow every week, and that we can provide additional insight into, as opposed to our normal gambling insight. Baylor and Oregon are now out. UConn has just devolved into jokes, basically, as has Syracuse to some extent. Penn State, there's occasional real analysis. next year, we'll be talking about Dino Babers Syracuse. We will be talking about Randy Edsall, Return of the Mac.
Oh, my.
We'll be talking about Penn State with everybody back. Should be a top 10 team going into this season. Texas. And, of course, to round out the five, Mr. Lane Kiffin, Mr. Kendall Briles, and Florida Atlantic. We will be talking about every Florida Atlantic game. We are destined to become the number one podcast for Florida Atlantic fans. So if you know any Florida Atlantic fans, please tell them to take the points on iTunes next year.
And thank you, Tom, for saying that. And like for us going to Austin, a nice trip. You're a East Coaster. Going to Florida is a tradition. Everybody goes. Get on a plane, go to Boca and watch Lane. And call him Joey Freshwater when he walks by for me.
Will do. All right. Dan has said his piece. Now, Ryan has also prepared a topic. Ryan, I'll just pass it off to you. You explain what this is about, and then say what it is you want to say.
All right. Thanks, Tom. I've been saving this for a while. I've been excited about this. So here it is. ESPN did an article a little while back, right around Thanksgiving time, where they did a poll of every college coach in the country of who their number one favorite musical act is. And they compiled the list by conference. So you can go through not just the Power Five, all the conferences. And I got some things to say about this list. But first things first. Three-way tie for the top vote getters. That three-way tie was Kenny Chesney, the Eagles, and George Strait. We got a lot of South going on.
I mean, regional, yeah, makes sense.
All right, next on that list is Garth Brooks.
Again, right behind, regional.
One vote behind those groups. Okay, then there's a whole bunch of stuff in there. I'm going to go through conference by conference real quick and give you a couple ridiculous, good and bad. Okay. We'll start alphabetically like I got here. This is hilarious. American Conference. My vote for the best would be Mike Norvell at Memphis with Tom Petty. I'll throw a shout out to Tom Herman, now of the Texas Longhorns, with Michael Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
And then we got Tuberville and Phil Montgomery with Johnny Cash, Otis Redding, respectively. I'll respect to that. But I got some problems with some teams on this list. Bob Diaco. Tom, would you like to guess who his favorite musical act is?
I'm going to guess that after I hear it, I'm probably going to be happy that he's fired. No, I have no clue who Bob Diaco could love. Dave?
Sia.
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 I thought you said Seal.
Nope.
No kiss from a rose today, son.
That would be funnier. Sia.
Yeah.
What?
Sia.
Bob Diaco.
Yep. Anyways.
Listen, I love the Dollar Dollar Bill song as much as anyone, but come on, man. Favorite band?
Okay. And to put the final nail in the Baylor coffin, new Baylor coach Matt Rhule, formerly of Temple University, selected the Dave Matthews Band.
Oh, there it is. Well, you knew that was coming. Although I would have hoped for a Philly guy, he would have picked like the Fresh Prince or something.
All right, moving along, ACC, real quick. Again, another awful Dave Matthews Band at Va Tech. Not good. Couple hilarious ones. Bobby Petrino, our favorite womanizer.
Sounds like a thorough good guy to me.
Oh no, he stuck with his comfort zone with the crazy cougar and went with Stevie Nicks. That's awesome.
Unusual, but fine.
Best of the ACC goes to Dave Clawson, your boy at Wake Forest, Tom.
Oh yeah.
With Talking Heads.
Really?
In the running for top of all the coaches. Great pick. One last one to our boy, Mark Richt. Selected his brother, David Richt. Yep.
Is that a person I should know about, or is he just like a guy who plays guitar at the local tavern?
Yeah, I think so. I think he just did that to be a dick, because why wouldn't he?
Charlie Strong.
Oh, Mark Richt. All right, move along.
Moving along to the Big 12. Dan's excited. We're going to go right into the recently fired Charlie Strong. DJ Khalid.
No, I don't believe that.
Swear to God, it says that on the sheet.
No, I believe you. I don't believe him. I think that somebody told him to say that. There's no way.
All the way up.
Yep.
We're talking his favorite artist, like, not of the year, like, in general, his favorite artist ever.
His number one favorite musical act.
Who determines their favorite musical act when they're, like, 41 years old? Like, DJ Khaled has only been out for, what, 2 years? And Charlie Strong, I think, is, like, 40. So at 38, he's like, I like this. This DJ Khaled song is my favorite thing I've ever heard. Not something that from my formative teen years, but this, like, this, I don't even know a DJ Khaled song, but I'm assuming it's a Dumb Dance song.
Sure.
He's all the way up.
All right. Anyways, all right. Move along in the Big 12 real quick. I'll knock these out. Really funny that Dana Holgorsen and Mike Gundy, who used to be the closest of friends and worked together, both selected Prince as favorite musical act. Very cool.
Good pick.
And, of course, Bill Snyder went with Frank Sinatra because he's 90.
Of course, yeah.
All right, to your favorite conference, Tom, the Big Ten. Couple of good ones. Lovie Smith with George Clinton.
Oh, there you go.
Jim Harbaugh with Bob Marley.
No, that is false.
Mike D'Antonio.
We got to pause. I've seen Jim Harbaugh. He's not a Bob Marley guy.
Oh, he's a Marley guy.
No. He listens to fucking John Mayer.
Probably. Anyways.
Old John Mayer.
Those are the three.
Yeah, not the trendy new stuff.
Your body is a wonderland era.
All right, go keep going.
Good ones. Final good one. Your boy James Franklin went with Jay-Z.
All right. Makes sense with his sort of, you know, attitude and style. I want Urban, though. What's Urban got?
Oh my God. You ask and you shall receive, Tom Z, because this goes on the list of maybe one of the worst three or four
of all time.
Here we go. Sister Hazel.
They have one song. Hard to say what it is I see. You all know that fucking song.
First off, I thought you were going to say something like the Mormon Tabernacle Choir from his time in Utah. But Sister Hazel's much worse.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. That's like saying, like, my favorite band is the New Radicals.
Well, that's better. I mean, I was just gonna say, Sister Hazel is not even in the top five acoustic one-hit wonders of 1996. Like, you could go with, it's not even the best one with Sister in the title. You could go with Sister by the Nixons is better.
Was Eagle Eye Cherry in that Eagle era?
Yes. Right now, I'm going to name five late 90s one-hit wonders that play acoustic that are all better than that song. Eagle Eye Cherry, one. New Radicals, two. The Nixons, three. Dan, help me out.
Banditos, the Refreshments.
Refreshments, four. Not quite acoustic, but close enough.
There was an acoustic in there. I saw him live.
Marcy Playground, throw him in there. Not amazing, but better.
Tonic.
Yes. Oh, fuck yeah. Tonic's much better than Sister Hazel.
Thank you.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen.
Tonic.
Coaches of the NCAA, please. My email is TomZelesnok@gmail.com. If you get approached by a journalist and you have to give your music taste and you've spent your entire life on a football field and don't know any songs from the last 20 years, give me a call. I will find one that fits your personality. Shoot me an email.
This is so genius. Keep going.
All right. Moving along to the Conference USA real quick. Not a lot on here. I will say props to Sean Coogler at UTEP with Zeppelin.
Southern Miss had the worst season. No wonder why.
And yes, as Dan said, Southern Miss had an awful season. That's because their coach picked Meatloaf as his favorite artist. All right, they suck. Moving along. Moving along.
Let's do the big conferences.
Nope. We're going to stop in the MAC real quick because we love the MAC.
Solich. Solich probably likes Johnny and the Raiders or some shit from the 40s.
Guy, Tom, he's a Seeger guy.
Oh, all right. Some of the new stuff.
Rod Carey at Northern Illinois has Pearl Jam.
Oh, my new favorite coach.
All right. Yep. Kent State, Paul Haynes has Prince. Jason Candle at Toledo with Jay-Z. Pretty good. Pretty good. Moving along.
At 12.
Hang on real quick. Mountain West. Going to throw real quick props to Brian Polian at Nevada with Springsteen and Bob Davey at New Mexico with my boy, Van the Man Morrison. Much, much respect to Bob Davey.
All right.
All right. Pac-12. Here we go.
Oh.
We got Sonny Dykes. Can't stop anybody up in Cal. Well, that's because the ants are marching up and down the field all over that clown. All right.
Why did I know Dave would make many appearances throughout this?
Yes.
Bad.
Mike Leach, our boy, of course, loves Neil Young.
Good answer.
He's the best. Of course he does.
Chris Peterson, pretty standard. He's a Creedence guy.
Oh, hey, man. That's good, too. Does Mike Leach listen to music on a Pono?
Most likely. Mm-hmm. Vinyl. And then also, even though he's been recently fired, the failed Mark Helfrich, much love, Daft Punk.
Yeah.
Whew. All right.
Very cool. Now to the big boys, to the SEC. Here we go. We got some junk. Oh. We got a bunch of junk. Someone.
This is all going to be regional, though, right? I mean, it's going to be country music, so.
Yeah.
You can't fault them for it. They grew up in it. They don't understand.
Most likely, yes. Like Saban, Eagles, standard. Very expected. Muschamp, George Strait, much expected. Stoops, Toby Keith, they're probably related.
Muschamp, George Strait is the perfect pick.
Yep.
Yeah, Hick.
If he emailed me, that's what I would have told him. That or Thurlgood. Sark gets Thurlgood.
Oh, yes. Real quick, couple that I thought were interesting. Gus Malzahn with the Cars.
All right.
Coach O, of course, Credence is the only music that's allowed in Coach O's office.
Well, in all of Louisiana. Even though they're from San Francisco, most people don't know that.
Very true. And Jim McElwain down in Gainesville, Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Not buying that one, but fine.
All right. Just to finish up real quick, since you did say Pearl Jam, there's one more Pearl Jam here. Your boy at Louisiana Lafayette, ULL.
See?
Rocking the Pearl Jam.
Yep. ULL, Northern Illinois.
I knew there was a reason I had a connection with that school.
There you go. South Alabama with Stevie Ray making an appearance on the list. And that's really about it. Not really much else. But been wanting to go through that list. Some pretty hilarious things on there. If you get a chance and you follow the podcast, go to my Twitter page. I retweeted the whole article with the list. So feel free. But thanks for, Tom, letting me do that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, guys, in the interest of time, I think it's time to skip ahead to the main event, the Take the Points Awards 2016. These are not your traditional awards. We'll read through the awards and what they mean, and I'll pass along to Dan and Ryan, who have thought about this all week and who should win these. These are awards, of course, we've made up throughout the years. We've added a few new ones this year. And I think we'll end on this. So, award number one. This is one we've been doing since the first episode of Take the Points several years ago. The Zach Mills Award, named after famous Penn State quarterback Zach Mills from, I believe, 2000 to 2004. This goes to the quarterback in college football who started out really hot as a freshman and continually gets worse every year of his career. So, Dan and Ryan, who is our Zach Mills Award winner this year?
I'm going to take Kenny Trill at TCU for the winner of the Zach Mills Award. First game for A&M had Manziel crowning him Kenny Trill. Now he's at TCU with all those weapons in that offense, and they finish with a losing record. Trill.
Go ahead, Tom. What do you think?
That's exactly who I had in mind. Kenny Trill. Two votes for Trill. So he's going to win this, Ryan, but you can – feel free to chime in.
Should, but I'm going to give an honorable mention to JT Barrett.
Good one.
Barrett had a bad last game, but I still believe in him.
He was expected to be a Heisman guy, putting up monster numbers, and he really didn't. He wasn't at that at all.
He just flat out bad the last half of the year.
He might get beat out next year.
No one does.
Well, he'll be back next year, so he could win this award next year.
Yeah, he can.
The Dan Connolly 12th Year All-Star Award, named after famed Syracuse linebacker Dan Connolly, for the player who feels like he's been in college forever. I think this is an easy one, but let's see what you guys think.
We all got the same one, and we're going to combine them. Chucky Keaton, Taysom Hill, BYU. They've both been there for 8 years.
So Chucky Keaton is from Utah State, and he left last year, Dan. I think you are thinking of Taylor Mangum, the backup of BYU.
Taylor Mangum, Taysom Hill, those two clowns.
So I was thinking between the two, and I figured this has to be a joint award to the two BYU quarterbacks who have spent a combined 17 years in college.
That's what we have on the paper, the two BYU quarterbacks.
Yep. All right, easy one. All right, moving along. This one's a little tougher. There's a couple guys I can think of. The LaDainian Tomlinson, have you heard about this guy award for the standout player from a non-Power 5 school?
Right. We're going to give it to Corey Davis from Western Michigan. He looks to be a stud. We also like Mr. Pumphrey from San Diego State a lot.
Okay. Those were my two picks in that order. So, Corey Davis, congratulations. A very close honorable mention to Donnell Pumphrey. The Danny Werfel Rhine Fire Award for a guy who probably won't have much of an NFL career, but who will always love and always remember from his college days.
This one's going to be a shocker for you. I'm going to take Clemson quarterback Deshaun Watson.
Whoa.
Oh.
Wow.
Ryan?
I do not agree with the vote. My vote goes to my boy at one of my favorite stories of the year at Houston, Greg Ward. Love Greg Ward. He's so fun. Receiver turned quarterback. You know, the only way he plays in the NFL is if he goes back to receiver, but even then he's kind of small. Super fun to watch. Super fun to bet. Probably not going to have a pro career in the NFL.
All right. I disagree vehemently with Dan Partridge. Greg Ward is a good pick. A few guys I thought about were, as much as I hate to say it, Penn State quarterback Trace McSorley. Don't think he's going to play on Sundays. JT Barrett crossed my mind for this one as well. Jake Browning, possibly. There's a lot of guys. So I'll go with Greg Ward. Let's give it to him.
Congrats.
All right. This is a... this one hopefully will be unanimous. The Beano Cook Humanitarian Award, named after deceased hero of ours, Beano Cook. This goes to a player who is the best example of a human being on and off the field. And because it's named after Beano Cook, it can only go to someone from the state of Pennsylvania. So therefore, I will nominate Pittsburgh Panther James Conner, who overcame cancer and came back and had a great season.
All right, that's fine and very honorable. Ryan's also going to vote for James Conner. You guys are good people. I'm going to go with Clemson D lineman, Mr. Bulware, who explained what four fingers deep really means.
This is the opposite of a humanitarian award.
Well, I know because I think he patched it up. I think he told everyone what was going on, and everyone said, that's the best explanation I've ever heard, and honest, and it ended the story already, so... I'm going to give it to Bulware, but I think we're going to give it to Connor overall.
We're giving it to Connor for sure. Regarding Bulware, though, you know, we've all played sports. I've been in some locker rooms. I can see why what he said is controversial, but, you know, he's not wrong.
No.
The Dabo Swinney Excellence in Coaching Award. This goes to a coach who made the leap this year from being a pretty decent coach or even a good coach to someone you now consider like a top-tier coach of college football.
We decided – wow, there's two different people. This is a tough one. I'm going to give it to our man, Mr. Petrino at Louisville. He's my vote.
Ryan?
I think that's a really good vote. He has kind of gone from a punchline to a top-tier respected coach whose name will pop up with every big job. But I'm going to actually go with Coach McIntyre out at Colorado. You know, going from San Jose State to Colorado, taking them to a bowl, then Colorado and getting on the cusp of a New Year's Six bowl. I think he's made the leap.
Yeah, it's for sure. And they have like no talent, and he was able to just patch it together and almost crash the playoff. I mean, that's impressive.
Yeah, I didn't have a definitive winner for this. McIntyre is great. James Franklin did a great job this year. Chris Peterson always did great at Boise, but I do think it takes him to a slightly greater level to do that same thing at a top-tier school. My thought was Tom Herman, although he was sort of already up there, he sort of solidified his spot as an absolute stud coach of college football, and now he's at Texas. So let's just leave that one open. Let's just say that we'll all vote for different people on that one. All right, some fun ones. The Laramie Tunsil Gas Mask Award. This goes to the funniest off-the-field incident. I couldn't think of much for this.
I'm going to vote Lane Kiffin for this and getting fired before the BCS National Championship game. That's a no-brainer. Ryan?
Correct. That is the only answer, is Lane getting fired a week before the title game.
Come on.
You know, I wrote this a week ago, and at the time I couldn't think of, and now I think Lane and Ben Bower are probably your two top guys. So Lane Kiffin, congratulations. I wasn't even thinking about coaches, but yeah. Lane. Oh, man, this might be the Lane Kiffin Award next year.
It is.
All right. The Paul Pasqualoni Underachiever of the Year, team, player, or coach. What do you got?
No-brainer. Notre Dame, Brian Kelly. F you both.
Yep. Easy pick.
That was my pick as well. We did not discuss these answers beforehand. We shared the categories, obviously, but sometimes you're just on the same page. All right, the flip side of that, the Randy Edsall Award for Overachiever of the Year, team, player, or coach?
Colorado was put together with scotch tape and twigs, and was way overachieved all year.
Yep, Colorado.
All right, I love it, Colorado. All right, speaking of Colorado, the Rashan Salaam In Memoriam Award, named after the recently deceased beloved Rashan Salaam. This goes to the best individual performance in any one game. So who in college football had the best single game this year?
That Arizona State running back with 7 touchdowns in one game. Although Pat Mahomes probably had a couple stat lines that was pretty fucking ridiculous.
I think you have to win, though, for this to count.
Yeah. ASU running back.
Yep.
Oh, is that both your votes? All right.
Yep.
I was going to say Lamar Jackson against Florida State with that unbelievable performance.
That's coming, yeah.
So, tie? Let's call it a tie?
Yeah, we'll call that one a tie.
They're fake awards, so it doesn't really matter.
Fakely mail out both awards. Okay, go ahead.
We actually should mail these guys all a certificate, and they'll be like, what the fuck is Take the Points?
I want to go out to lunch with Lane Kiffin. I just want to see if he wants to hang out.
You could probably arrange that.
I'm going to try.
Okay. The 1995 Nebraska Cornhusker Award for the best team performance in any game. What team had the best single game this year?
That was Louisville over Florida State. That was your Lamar Jackson game. I mean, it was one of those games where like you kept watching it. You thought Florida State was going to make some sort of run, and if you're a sports bettor and you do live betting, like, I'll take Florida State now, +4, I can't believe it. And then they lose by 100. So that was pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's definitely got to be that, and not just because of Lamar Jackson. The defense was ridiculous in that game. That was definitely a top to bottom. They did punt returns, kick returns, they just dominated them, blocked punt. They're awesome.
All right, so we'll give them the award. For the record, though, my vote was actually for the Michigan Wolverines against Rutgers. Not a great opponent, but I think with, like, 7 minutes left in the game, Rutgers had something like 8 total yards, and they lost 77-0. It was the most one-sided game I saw this year. Again, a huge talent disparity, but I'm happy to give it to Louisville. All right, the big game Bob Stoops Award for the best game of the year.
Rose Bowl.
All right. My thought when I wrote this was Michigan, Ohio State, but I think the Rose Bowl may have surpassed that. So Rose Bowl. All right. Only one person needs to chime in on this next one. This is the Dan Partridge Annual Award for the best gambling moment of the year.
Best gambling moment of the year. Well, you know, I really had a hard time with, you know, with this one. And there's not a lot of just straight spreads that I can remember, you know, really getting an absurd lucky moment. That's how gambling works. You only remember the bad stuff. But I'm going to give it to the over in Texas Tech, Arizona State. We were so sure of that by like week three in the season that we, or week two, we knew that that was the easiest over that you're going to see in a long time. And I never felt more confident, I think, in my life wagering an over than in that game. So I just kind of felt like, you know, vindicated a little bit. So I'm going to go with the over in Texas Tech, Arizona State. I think it was like 80-something. It was way over. It was 125 points. So, yeah, that was a good one. I'm going to go with that. You got one, Tom, by chance?
Not a moment, but along the same lines, I think us figuring out the Texas Tech overs early in the season and riding that for a good, like, six-week stretch, that was my gambling highlight. Although I will say this recent bet the first half and then double up on the second half under of the bowl games is that was a strong contender. Came on a little bit late, but if we had begun that from the start of bowl season, I think that would probably be it. Next Ryan, year. Do you have anything?
No, I think the overs are, Washington State and Texas Tech overs were always really fun, and they were good to get on early. We were on those pretty early.
All right, in that case, we will mail out a certificate to Cliff Kingsbury. All right, around the horn now. Each person, what will you remember most about the 2016 college football season? Dan?
What I remember the most about this 2016 season, my notes says Lane underlined.
That says so, it all. No elaboration needed.
Yeah, that's it.
Ryan?
That's pretty damn good. I like that. Mine would just be balance. Like, I just really liked that it was really balanced this season. I was pretty happy with the way that the things kind of shook out, and I think next year it's going to be super exciting. There's a lot of teams with a lot of guys coming back.
All right. For me as a Penn State fan, to see their sort of revival was great. To see Houston early on in the season before it unfortunately kind of fell apart, that was cool. But I think what I'll remember most about this season is just the two best teams won out. And this was sort of a year where the best teams that we thought were the best early on showed that they were the best pretty much throughout the season. Like the playoff teams, in addition to like Oklahoma, Penn State and USC later, Michigan, the best teams looked the best and separated themselves. And there was a gap between those like, you know, seven or eight teams and everybody else. And especially there was a gap between Alabama, Clemson and the rest. So the best teams won. We saw really elite college football at the top of the rankings. And I think we got the championship game that we really want. So I'm looking forward to that. What you'll remember most about the year 2016, non-football related, anything that stands out? Doesn't have to be, everyone's thinking election, but you can say anything. It could be personal. It could be anything else.
2016 was a hard year. I mean, there were some good personal moments for me. There was also, you know, some not great stuff for me, the country, everything. But for me, just a quick 30-second spiel, it was the year the country finally kind of went crazy. You know, America never used to kind of be like this. You know, there's school shootings and people getting tortured and tied up, and you know, the media not sharing, or like, you know, not sure what like words they should use. We live in a crazy politically correct society, and sometimes that's the right thing and sometimes it's the wrong. And I think people are just getting so moved to either the far right or far left at this point, and we need just more people in the middle. So I just ask you all just to chill out a little bit. And even if you hate our current president, find one thing that he is in favor of, and at least hang on to that and wait 4 years and vote like a normal person if you want change, and then do that. But, you know, it's just like, it's a scary time a little bit, but I think people are over exaggerating it a little bit. But I totally hear him at the same time. Like, there's a lot of uncertainty, and it's just kind of like predictions at this point. But what I'm trying to say is, 2016 was a crazy year, and people need to chill out a little bit. It's not going to get better, I don't think. So just stay safe and appreciate everybody, and just try to be really nice to everybody. Life's too short. Have fun. That's my spiel.
Ryan, what will you remember most about 2016?
Oof, well, kind of that, you know, the same thing. The you know, things got crazy, but you know, we also had some pretty cool stuff with you know, Alabama going undefeated and things like that. But you know, I think most this year was just, you know, it was a challenge, but we're through the challenge. So like Dan said, like everyone needs to try to find a middle ground and relax a little bit, and you know, let's ride this thing out together and see if we can figure some shit out, you know, make some good change, something.
All right. So the last question, I'm going to say the last question, cause my answer to these is combined. What you're looking forward to in 2017. I knew that we'd probably have negative things about 2016. So, you know, something positive that you are looking forward to in 2016. So for me, besides the election stuff, the thing I'll remember most about 2016 is an easy one. I had my first child in August, my daughter, who, obviously, it's a life-changing event. You know, I don't need to go through like all the, we've all heard from people with kids who say like how it changes your life and the bad things, like you don't sleep, blah, blah, blah. As well as the good things, like how you love them so much. So I don't need to rehash that. All I would say is like, she's finally getting to the age where she starts to absorb things. And, you know, the first few months, all you have to do is like, feed the kid, change them, put them to sleep. It's a lot of like utilitarian processes. Now we're getting to the part where she can pay attention and learn things. And I have to, like be a good role model, which, makes me think like, what do I need to do better in my life to be a better role model? Even not that I'm some degenerate, except for gambling wise, of course, but, I've been thinking about like, what can I do next year in 2017 to be even like a better role model for my young daughter as she starts to absorb things around her. So 2016, we often joke, was the year of the dick. I think Dan kind of touched on that. That was our hashtag for the year. I want to encourage everyone for 2017. I want it to be the year of action. I want people who have been, you know, posting things on Facebook about how much everything sucks to actually like go and do something. And it doesn't have to be, like you don't have to donate $1 million or you don't have to like go save the world, but just do like anything, some small thing, like volunteer somewhere for one day, give some money to something, be nice, help somebody, just do any like one thing. And that's my goal for 2017, is to figure out like a few smaller things that I could do. So #year of action.
I like it.
We'll check back in August and hopefully I've just done like two things. I'll be happy with that. So like guys, I'll let you two end it then. What are you looking forward to on the positive side in 2017?
Whew, 2017, what I'm looking for on the positive side. Well, I'm looking forward to the Pittsburgh Penguins repeating as Stanley Cup champs in June. That's going to be a lot of fun. And I don't know. There's a lot of uncertainty for me and in sports in 2017. Like the NFL, I don't know who's going to win the Super Bowl. I don't know if the Cavs or Warriors is going to win the title or the Spurs, one of those three. I mean, can you really say that the Cubs are going to win it again after only winning one title in the last 100-whatever years? Sports are an interesting time. Politics will be interesting. If nothing else, then won't be, the snoozer. It'll be good TV. So, yeah, I'm excited for the uncertainty that 2017 brings and a fresh start.
All right, I'll end this thing off.
Take us home, Ryan.
I'm going to take you home, Tom. I'm going to take you home in the best way possible. My hashtag for the next however long it takes for 2017, Dabo to Buffalo. Let's get this going. Let's go. Love Dabo. Hope this is an awesome game. If they beat Alabama, he's got nothing else to prove. Let's go to Buffalo. Sammy Watkins wants him. Let's do this thing.
You, as the number one fan of the Frank Reich, Chad Kelly to Buffalo, how can you change your tune at this last moment?
I still love that. That is still the more likely option. But if I had a dream of a better world in 2017, then my better world involves Dabo Sweeney in Buffalo. Why
Buffalo's
not?
Just going to be half Clemson guys within a couple years.
They love the cold. Snow. They love the snow. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's nothing guys from the South love more than moving up to Buffalo.
Orchard Park Applebee's place to go.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. We see the numbers of the show go up a little bit, but steadily every year, and this was our best year yet. So thanks to everyone who downloaded or listened. I guess I should do like a credit. So Ryan Spillett, Dan Partridge, our theme song, DJ Tig. We don't thank him enough. Tim Spillett has made Take the Points t-shirts if anybody wants one. Reach out to Ryan on Twitter and he'll get you a t-shirt. Until then, we're off, I guess, until August. Maybe we'll drop a surprise podcast sometime in then. But for the most part, we're off until next season. So download on iTunes and subscribe on iTunes, rather. And when the new one comes out, it'll pop right up for you. Thank you for listening. Bye, everybody.
See ya. Adios.
Take the point.